Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And folks, there is a lot of things on my mind today, but the economy is not doing well, and there's a lot of rumblings. I'm going to get to that here in the brief in a bit, but there's a lot of folks being laid off out there, and you know, my thoughts and prayers go out to you, and you know, we need to come together and, you know, help our fellow brothers and sisters in Christ find work as well. It's amazing how fast people's lives can change. And you know, it's good for us all to not take for granted the things that we have, be thankful every day for the things that we have. Every morning, thank God for the blessings He showered out upon us, especially for living here in the United States of America, number one. But I really want to—I think this underscores something completely different but definitely related, and that's that we have to get involved at the local level, and we need to reclaim our republic. We need to revoke our consent as the people of those that are seeking our destruction or are too ignorant to realize they are destroying us and reclaim it. And you know what? It's going to be hard. The hard part is showing up and running for office, maybe for water commissioner or sewer commissioner, maybe running for city council or town council. That's hard because it takes time, and it takes time out of your life and takes time away from your family. But folks, if we don't show up, you know, we're going to have more and more people laid off. We're going to have more and more people without a job. And then eventually, you know, whether we want it to or not, politics will come into our lives. And so expending a little bit of effort up front, I think, is critical. The second part of this is that it really underscores the need to be self-reliant. You know, have that year's supply of food stored up. Have some emergency cash on hand. Make sure that you are reaching out and figuring out how to be prepared, to learn skills that maybe even haven't been taught in 100 years, 200 years, that will come in handy. You know, these are the things that your grandfather, your grandmother taught you and told you about. These are things that are completely forgotten about nowadays. You know, tricks. For example, I heard a really interesting trick for septic systems of taking a dead chicken, letting it rot for 3 days and throwing it in the septic system to reinvigorate the microbes in there. And this friend that told me is using a particular type of septic system called an infiltrator system that literally he hasn't pumped out in, I think, what, 15 years? You heard that right. He hasn't pumped it out in 15 years because he uses this old method that I think it just gets lost from one generation to the next. And for those of you in the older generations, you know, don't take for granted your knowledge, knowledge of all these skills. Pass it on to the next generation. And you might say, well, they're not going to listen to me. Oh, you know, they don't want to know about it. Yeah, we do. There are many of us out here that do. So please share that knowledge with us. And one of the other pieces of knowledge, too, that should be shared is the connecting of dots. You know, you lived... I'm speaking to the older generation now. You lived through a lot of things, and you know who's who. You know who was honest in a crisis and who was a good leader in a crisis and who wasn't. And you know, back in the 60s, who the bad guys were and the anti-Americans were and the 70s, and who was pro-America. And you can help us in younger generations connect the dots. Share that. Don't hold it back. Share it. So we don't have to stumble and bumble through things as we just didn't know. And especially, you know, the idea of discernment, you know, as we're coming into this presidential election. And I want to put this in perspective. I view the presidential election as being about 5% of where our effort should be versus 95% down at the state and local level. But discernment isn't just in the national races. It's also in the state, you know, legislative races. And your ability to discern who's who and who's actually going to be a good leader and an honest leader and tell you the truth, even if it's hard, but work with you for the solutions. Work with all of us for the solutions. It's invaluable. So I implore you, as the older generation, please share your knowledge. And share the things you messed up, the mistakes, so we don't make them too. And that's how I think we can make freedom a reality. Because a lot of this is going to be knowledge and wisdom in regards to following Jesus Christ and keeping our hope in Jesus. And that's why, you know, for me, Jeremiah 6:16 hits home so well this year, because it says, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths. Ask who? The older generation for the ancient paths. Ask where the good way is. Who? The older generation. And walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. Wow. Several thousand years later, and still true. And now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, once again, Russia putting nuclear-capable Iskander missiles into Syria. And also, on top of that, doing a simulated attack in the Baltic on a U.S. warship. This is about the fifth time, I think, in the last couple of years this has occurred. And what's happening is the Russians are not just provoking, they're testing out their own systems. And they know that the U.S. is not going to fight back. You know, they know they're not going to fire on them, so they're testing systems. And I got to tell you, I suspect that they're testing electronic warfare, EMP warfare, and they're not testing the actual system itself, but the ranges. I think that's where they're going with that. And so just keep your eyes on it, because this is once again an attack on a U.S. warship, or simulated attack on a U.S. warship. And the Russians really are provoking. The Chinese came out today and praised that provocation. So you can see things starting to really really become a rolling boil, if you will, in not only the Middle East, but in other parts of the world as well. And it's very clear that they're not our friends. And they could care less if there are people inside the United States who believe what the Russian propaganda machine is saying. And I'm gonna digress here real quick, because this is really important. It is important to realize what you don't know. And I get inundated with information a lot. And the other day, my eyes were opened even further to what I don't know, and all of the things I don't know that are going on in the world. And there's a great book on this called Disinformation by General Ion Mihai Pacepa, P-A-C-E-P-A. And that book explains all of this stuff that the Russians do, the propaganda machine of the Russians. So don't buy into the disinformation campaigns in our own media or from the Russian propaganda machines through, you know, RT, Russia Today, or any of these other outlets. Folks, the KGB machine is still there. And disinformation, I mean, I think conclusively proves it. I mean, it's still there. And Putin was a KGB man. So don't fall into this. And don't fall into our own country. Even with media sources you trust that are trying to sway your opinion one way or another, this gets into the whole idea of what's called activity-based intelligence, or the idea that you can profile people to such an extent that you can introduce ideas, introduce statements, and manipulate how somebody will react to that. And the reason I bring this up is because we start talking about the economy. Don't buy the disinformation. Look at the facts objectively and connect the dots. And that brings us to one point of what's going on in the international front, and that is 2,000 migrants a day coming into Sicily. Can you pay for that? Absolutely not. So I have to ask, why are they allowing that to happen? They closed the route in through the Balkans. Why are they allowing to come in through Sicily? Unless it's intentional. Which brings us to the economic side on the international front, and that is all the economic rumblings that are out there. It looks like the oil surplus that has been out there for a while is running out. So that means oil prices are going to rise. Looks like gold and silver prices are going to rise. Some other commodity prices are looking like they're going to rise. And Greenspan comes out today, who's a former Fed chair, and says that our, quote, monetary policy has hit a wall, end quote. Well, what was that policy? That policy was continuing to print money. It was continuing to inflate our currency. So they're acknowledging right now they don't have anything left in the toolbox to stave off a dramatic economic downturn, what I would call a collapse. And on top of that, today Deutsche Bank admitted rigging gold prices. It's on, you can check that out if you want to, on Zero Hedge. And I've heard from several different sources that people are very concerned there is going to be something happening here in the next few months in the way, you know, in the idea of a dramatic economic downturn. Now, it could be a year from now, but people are very concerned. And these statements, kind of connecting all these dots together, it really looks like that's where we're headed. So again, realize what you don't know. And if you think you do know somebody, or you think you do know a government policy, you probably don't. That's kind of a rule I've used. And it's especially true when we're talking about this. And then to add all on top of all of that, George Soros comes out and says the European Union is in quote, mortal danger, end quote. And of course, the solution is more government and a tax to pay for all of it, so that there's just basically a one country of the European Union. Understand where this is headed, folks. Connect the dots. On the national front, once again, Hillary Clinton is not in prison or even charged with anything, even though her emails were beyond top secret. I'm going to keep bringing this up and see if we are a republic of laws still, or we are a lawless country. Also on the national front, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, this federal court of appeals, ruled that the warrantless collection of cell phone locations is okay. I want to say that again. The warrantless collection of cell phone locations is okay. Now, there were certain law enforcement officials here in Spokane County who said that technology doesn't exist. We don't do that. Well, yeah, clearly they do. Clearly they do. Clearly cell phones are being used to locate people. It's your own personal tracker. The technology exists, and the Sixth Circuit at least thinks it's okay for that to be warrantlessly collected. Now, once again, and I've said this on the show before, if somebody came into your house, busted down the front door, walked in, went into your file cabinet, and started stealing stuff out of it, you would say, hey, what are you doing? That's theft. If the government did it without a warrant, you'd be like, hey, you need a warrant. So I just failed to find why electronic files are any different. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today with my guest, because, man, this seems pretty simple to me. And especially with the Washington State Constitution, Article 1, Section 7, which says there's a right of privacy in your personal affairs and effects. I think your location is a personal affair. Anyway, Microsoft now is suing over the gag orders that also were issued by guess who? The federal government, federal courts, saying that they cannot talk about the surveillance that they've been asked to do. So once again, we come to this situation where the federal government is determining its own boundaries through its court system. And that was never what the founding fathers intended. They intended the states to be able to check that and say, no, you can't. Because otherwise, if the federal government can determine the boundaries and extent of its own power, it can just grow forever. And that's exactly what we're seeing in the surveillance state. And to add insult to injury, probably the single most important agency in the federal government, and the one that needs to be completely eliminated, the one that everybody's effort should be focused on to eliminate. Again, I think probably the most powerful agency in the federal government, the IRS, the IRS chief encourages the theft of Social Security numbers to be used for illegal immigrants. And then just today, this was I think yesterday or the day before, and then just today, a judge rules that the IRS is, quote, untrustworthy. Well, thank you for putting that in a court ruling. Many of us already, I think, knew that. And they specifically said that they were untrustworthy in the Tea Party case. These are the cases that I've been talking about on the show for a while, where they intentionally targeted Tea Party groups for audits and or they did not allow them to gain 501c3 or 501c4 status as punishment for being the Tea Party. It just goes to show that President Obama and the Democrat Party use organs of government for political retribution. And anyway, Judge today acknowledged it, but my goodness, I mean, on the heels of the IRS chief saying to steal Social Security numbers, and they say the IRS is untrustworthy, I thought that was rich. Also, on the regional front, tomorrow, political prisoners will be arraigned in regards to what happened down in Oregon. And again, they're being charged with, quote, a conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States of America, end quote. I don't even know what that means. I'm an attorney. I practiced in federal court before. I don't even know what that means. But if you have not watched A Day at the Bundys by Dennis Michael Lynch, great movie about what happened down there, I challenge everybody listening today, watch that movie, A Day at the Bundys, Dennis Michael Lynch, and tell me if those people should be in jail or if they're in jail for what they believe. And if they're in jail for what they believe, we actually have, as I believe, political prisoners in America today. Which brings us to the local front and campaign season. This is why we have to reclaim our republic at the local level. Get involved in campaigns for county commissioner. My great friend Josh Kearns is running for county commissioner. Extremely experienced at navigating the corrupt waters of government and making sure that he has strategies to be effective and to turn back the tide and expand freedom. He's been very successful at it over the last several years as an aide in the state legislature, and he is extremely experienced at knowing how to navigate the dramatic pressures that come to bear without compromising principle. And that is the type of person we need at the local level as a county commissioner in this time. Somebody that understands private property rights. Somebody that understands the surveillance state. Somebody that understands how to protect the right to bear arms at the local level. Somebody who knows how to use coordination to push back against the federal government. So there are many good candidates locally. Check them out and help them out. And also, I would be remiss not to remind you of my own fundraiser coming up and my kickoff on April 28th, a few days after the 100th anniversary of Irish independence. We're going to be having it up at Tretzi Farm Winery, 6:30, $25 a person. And if you haven't been up there, it is a tremendous time, great time of fellowship, good food. Tretzi Farm always does a great job. April 28th, 6:30. Look forward to seeing you all there, and that is The Briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. And thank you to everybody that has been praying for myself and Victoria. Really, we can feel your prayers. I don't know how else to describe it, but we can, and thank you for doing that and taking the time out of your day. I can't tell you how much it means to us. And if you get a chance, share Patriot Radio with your friends and family. Go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, Patriot Radio US, like the page, and tell everybody you know to listen in as well. Or they can listen to the replay at 9 p.m. all over the American Christian Network. And they can listen to podcasts at Matt Shea on Podbean. That's B-E-A-N, Podbean. And you can listen to it on your way to work or whenever you want to. You don't have to actually listen to us when we're broadcasting live on the radio. We have them up usually a day or two after the show. Well, I want to bring up, we've talked a lot about technology today. I want to bring on the show my great friend Pat Wood, who is the author of Technocracy, Rising, and also a website, talks about this all the time. Pat, thanks once again for joining me, and really appreciate everything you're doing in the fight for freedom and liberty.
Hey, Matt, good to talk to you.
So what's going on? I mean, let's start with a couple of things. What is going on with the economic situation from your perspective? I mean, I'm starting to really hear some rumbling, so I'd really love to get your take on that first before we get into some of the technocracy stuff.
Well, you bet. It is related. The economy is directly related to the technocracy story that I put forth in my book, Technocracy Rising, and I talk about this all the time. My background is in economics, as you know, so I'm sensitive to these issues. But technocracy is a replacement economic system that was proposed way back in the 30s, but it's had a resurgence here in the last 40 years. It's designed to replace capitalism and free enterprise altogether. It's being pushed by the United Nations and the global elite under the names of things like sustainable development, Agenda 21, 2030 Agenda, global warming, you get the idea. And this is an alternative economic system. And the United Nations has been trying to implement this around the world. They've diverted trillions of dollars already of investments into the so-called green economy, which is a resource-based economy, with the intent of displacing capitalism and free enterprise. Now, I'll tell you what's happened here. There are two economic systems vying for supremacy in the global marketplace. One is going to die and one is going to live. This is a cage fight to the death. The two systems are completely antithetical. They're not. It's even worse than oil and water. They absolutely don't mix. It's more like matter and antimatter. And the reason that our economy globally is upside down is because this battle is going on right now. It's going on in our country. If you haven't noticed, you probably did, the largest coal company in America just filed for bankruptcy, Peabody Energy.
Wow.
Obama said in 2008 he's going to kill the coal industry. And now we see the largest coal company in our country, and actually it's the largest privately held company in the world that mines coal, and they declared bankruptcy. Coal supplies 37% of our energy in America. Who's going to make up the deficit? This is an economic thing that's going on here. It has political ramifications, yes, it does, but it's not primarily political. It's driven by economic issues, and the United Nations and their whole crowd is intent on killing off capitalism and free enterprise. Isn't this inconceivable? It's just, how could you wrap your head around this? How do you kill the global economic system that has really been the only economic system the world has ever known? Yet, they have big egos, and this is what they're trying to do. They're declared on paper, in writing, and verbally, that this is their intent, Matt. It's a huge story wrapped around the economic situation in the world and our country.
It really is, and I think a lot of people have missed this, and especially the push, and I want to go down this road a little bit, the push toward a digital currency and why that literally is slavery, and the idea that we can no longer use cash, and oh, by the way, we have negative interest rates, which will essentially be a tax on bank accounts. People, I don't think, understand how close we actually are with all of the cash controls that have already been implemented and the laws that have already been passed to allow implementation on an emergency basis that are out there. So if you could talk a little bit about the implication of cashless societies as part of technocracy as well.
Oh, absolutely. And this is also just a key thread of technocracy, of implementing technocracy. If you were to go and download the 2030 Agenda from the United Nations website, which was agreed to by 193 nations last October, the 2030 Agenda, this is Agenda 21 on steroids. If you read it, you should be impressed with something that you see repeated over and over again in the different goals and the different paragraphs and stuff they have. And that is, they talk about no person left behind. They talk about inclusion, but that really expands the definition, no person left behind. They are intent on getting every human person on this planet involved in this system. Currently, depending on your country, you have anywhere from 20%, like maybe 25% in America, up to 50, 60, 70% in some countries in Africa, where people are completely unplugged from the system. They've never seen a computer. They don't have a computer. They don't have, you know, credit cards. They don't have digital money of any kind. They just deal with cash. Well, this whole movement towards towards cash right now, or cashless society, which is the central banks are talking about it. Larry Summers is writing about it openly. You've got major global banks talking about it. You know it's coming. It's just a matter of when. But the goal of it is not to arrest smugglers. Oh, my gosh. You know, it's not to arrest people who want to launder money. It's to get everybody into the system so they can control all the people of the world. We see this phrase, no person left behind, time and time again in United Nations literature. And I would point out, this is interesting, I would point out that in 1938, the Technocrat magazine gave this definition of technocracy, which fits perfectly today. It said, quote, technocracy is the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population. The word entire appears twice in that short statement. Everybody has to be on board in order for technocracy to work. That's their honest, heartfelt belief. It is crackpot, in my opinion. I think it is in yours, too. But that is what they believe, and that's what they're trying to accomplish with this idea of a cashless society.
And I think that the part that perhaps is, well, that just can't possibly happen because no one is going to be on board with it. People aren't going to go for that. And yet I see an incremental step toward all of this and toward technocracy. It's almost imperceptible to people who are just worried about what's going on in their daily lives, and they don't even know that they're being swept up in it. And if you could highlight a couple of ways that people you know are being swept up in this that they might even realize and it might not even acknowledge.
Well, in our country, of course, we're very much a plugged-in nation. You know, pretty near everybody on the street that you see now has a smartphone of some kind. They're bumping into light poles, and they're driving off the road. And they're paying for their Starbucks with their iPhone or their Samsung, you know, whatever. Young people, especially in America, are, you know, they're social instruments of Facebook and Snapchat and whatever. They're always plugged in. For that generation, they're numb to the idea of government surveillance. They're just numb to it. But in the technocrats' mindset, there's never such a thing as enough data. They always want more data. So you have now, people being tracked by their cell phones, warrantless tracking, if you will. And that's easy. That's nothing to people that got the technology. You got the NSA collecting data nilly-willy, all your phone calls, all your emails, all your financial transactions, all your Facebook and social media posts, all that kind of stuff. It's all going into a master database. And fortunately, they can't analyze it all yet at once, but that's coming. It'll catch up. But Americans are pretty numb to this now because we've been desensitized to electronic stuff. And so when some new gadget comes out, people run to it. Oh, my gosh, look what that will do. I could really use that. And they don't realize there's a huge back door that just lets the government come in and do more to them. People are numb, for instance, on smart grid by and large. They don't, you know, they got a new digital meter on the side of their home. So doesn't mean anything to them. It's like, well, you know, whatever, they told me they were going to balance the load or something. And they don't even know that they're – utility is going to balance a load on their back, but you know they say, must be okay. They said it was okay. So this kind of apathy is pretty widespread, and it's pretty depressing. The only thing good about it is that you and I both know you don't need to have 30% of the populace wake up in order to set things right. We probably can set things right if even 5% wake up, maybe 3%. So some of the people in our nation will never wake up until the party's over.
And that's why we're doing the radio show.
I mean, that's right. Exactly right.
We've got to wake folks up to this. And some of this technology that I've seen that I think can be exploited as part of technocracy and as part of control over people that has come really into the fore here in the last month or two is virtual reality. You know, they're talking about virtual reality surgeries, now this Oculus set that's being sold. And virtual reality actually can be used to go into an individual, directly to an individual, straight to them with whatever message it is, and not just a pre-recorded message. You could do it with actually a live message. You could do all kinds of things with that. And the implications, I think, are profound. So I don't want to steal your thunder or anything, but if you could kind of go down the road of virtual reality, how could this be a part of it? How could this be exploited and used?
Well, yeah, people that are the early adopters of virtual reality technology are saying that the immersion into this technology sets a person up to where they can't really tell the difference between reality and what they're seeing. It's that real. And so it plays with your mind. You have false experiences that you take in as being real. And this has never been really possible before. Not in this way. Not at this level. You know, you can read a news story and it can be lying to you, but you're not living it either. You know, it's not, I mean, you read it, you have to take it in still through your eyeballs. But virtual reality fools you into thinking that something is fake is actually real. Like, in other words, like you'll have a real memory of an incident that might have happened in virtual reality. And it's being used for all kinds of things. The leader, by the way, in the virtual reality market is pornography. No surprise there. But, you know, they're one of the big pushers of this right now. And this has the potential to devastate demographics throughout the Western world. Because when people get immersed in this technology, when it comes to like pornography, you have no need for a human being anymore. you can just turn it off and say, well, I don't want to do that anymore. But you don't have any need to have a human being in your life to enjoy sexual, you know, whatever. It's crazy. I know it sounds really crazy. Anybody listening to this, don't go try that for Pete's sake. But it's like the memory, what you see becomes actually real to you, and it recircuits your brain so that you cannot tell the difference between illusion and reality.
That is key, because we're detaching ourselves from physical interactions. We're already doing it. I mean, you see people walking down the street with a cell phone, buried their head in, and, you know, we're taught, as at least people that are observant, that if you're using a cell phone, I mean, it takes away almost all of your situational awareness. I remember reading about a story where a guy was literally sitting at a bar. The bar was robbed, and the robbers went right past him, and he scooted over for them as he was paying attention to his cell phone. And when they interviewed him afterwards, he said, oh, no, I didn't see anybody. I didn't see anything that was on my phone. And that's the kind of detachment, I think, that can be pretty well exploited. I do.
It is. I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Matrix some years ago, but this has a lot of similarities. Our current situation is very similar in some ways to The Matrix, where the people didn't even know they were in The Matrix, you know, but they had lives and they did stuff, but they didn't know they were in The Matrix. And there's a good subset of our country today that's in that same situation. They're so buried into their fantasy of technology that they just don't know where they are. And I should say, I'm not anti-technology in any way. There's nothing evil inherently about technology any more than money is evil. Money's not evil. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. So, you know, the misuse of technology can be horribly evil. But technology by itself is not necessarily evil, and there are many good benefits that actually could accrue, or sometimes really do accrue, to people who are able to use technology in the right way. It's just a question of how you use it. And our government, unfortunately, is not on our side anymore, as you know. And so they're using technology against us, you know, to control us, to enslave us. And this is not a good use of technology by any means. But the question is going to come up, well, how can we stop it? How can we throw the monkey wrench in there?
Well, that is ultimately the question. What can we do to stop this? What are the solutions? How do we stop the, you know, the massive overreach? I mean, we're literally, it's like watching a slow motion train wreck happening right now. And I think if, obviously the first part is education, and that's what you've done through your book. I mean, people didn't even know this was an actual thing until you really shined the light in on this. And they didn't know that this was an intentional plan either. So if you could kind of go into like kind of the bigger picture part of this, connect the dots a little bit for us, even more than you did a little earlier.
Well, sure. Historically, technocracy started out in a big way at Columbia University in 1932. That was the same year that Aldous Huxley wrote Brave New World, by the way. And guess where he got his inspiration? Columbia University. But technocracy kind of fizzled. The prominent scientists and engineers of that day were engineering this new economic system to replace capitalism with free enterprise. It turned into depression. They thought it was dead. They thought capitalism was done. And so they rose up and said, hey, we can make a better world. And so they wrote this utopian type economic system that would be based on energy rather than money. And it did fizzle. It kind of died out by the end of the 40s. It was just kind of talked about here and there, but not much. In the meantime, they had over 500,000 card-carrying dues-paying members back in that day. It was a big deal for a while. It came back to life in a way by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who wrote a book called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. That's 1970. Brzezinski happened to also be at Columbia University, surprise, surprise, as a political science professor. And this book endeared him to David Rockefeller. Together, the two of them then formed the Trilateral Commission in 1973. And here really starts the story. The Trilateral Commission said that they were going to create a new international economic order. That was all over the literature. I studied the Trilateral Commission extensively back in the 70s with my partner, Anthony Sutton. So we know I have a lot of historical backlog on the Trilateral Commission. They said all over their literature and every publication they put out, their goal was to create a new international economic order. We didn't understand what that meant back then. I didn't understand it until I discovered technocracy. Because technocracy is the only alternative economic system that has ever, ever, ever been devised in the world. There has never been another economic system that was designed to replace capitalism and free enterprise except for technocracy. So when the Trilateral Commission said, we're going to create a new international economic order, and then I discover about technocracy, the light bulb went on, Matt. And I went back and I reread Brzezinski's book, especially paying attention to the subtitle, which said America's Role in the Technotronic Era. I read the book again, and lo and behold, it's full of technocracy. It's just warmed over technocracy from the 1930s. And so with the scientists and engineers on one hand that wanted to be the technocrats, coupled with the Rockefeller money and all the global elite that went along with that, they set out to create this new technocracy implied, you know, applied to the world. By 1992, we see the Rio Summit, the Rio de Janeiro Summit that produced Agenda 21 and popularized sustainable development. That entire doctrine came from a lady that finished a commission for the UN in 1987. Her name was Gro Harlem Brundtland. She was the ex-prime minister of Denmark at the time. She was a member of the Trilateral Commission. And they produced a book in this study called Our Common Future, which even the United Nations says was the principal document that allowed the creation of Agenda 21. So the whole Trilateral Commission agenda was passed off purposely to the United Nations. So now we have Agenda 21. Now we have global warming. Now we have sustainable development, et cetera, all over the world. And this is how this whole thing has progressed. But what we see happening at the United Nations is technocracy, and I refuse to call it anything else. They want to call it sustainable development. Well, I'll mention that, but it's technocracy. And that is the proper name that really should be used for this, And I use it. I want to own that word if necessary. You know, it is technocracy, and people need to understand it for what it is. It's not new at all. It's not some brainchild that somebody just cooked up last year. This thing has been around for a long time. People have written books about it. The book 1984 was about technocracy, by the way. Those two books themselves ought to be enough to scare the pants off of somebody. But, you know, this whole global warming stuff that's going on, Matt, this is the fear scare the pants off of. And the only solution being offered to people once their pants are scared off is sustainable development. And they say, if you accept and adopt sustainable development, why, we'll help you put your pants back on. And this is the only solution being offered to people around the world. And yet, there's no proof that sustainable development will work or technocracy. There's no economic studies on it that make any sense to me. The economists that don't recognize that this alternative system is trying to impose itself on the world, they're hanging on to their old forecast models, their old methods of doing economic forecasting. And they're shocked every time government statistics come out that they missed the forecast. You hear it all the time. Doesn't matter what data point's coming out. Oh, you know, the experts missed it. Why'd they miss it? They didn't used to miss it, but they can't make an economic forecast worth a hill of beans today because their models will not work on a system that was not designed for their models. It's completely different. Oh, surprise, surprise. Anyway, that kind of brings it up to the beginning. If people still struggle with this, I realize it's a difficult concept. But the head of climate change last year, Christiana Figueres, she's a very important woman at the UN. She's the top dog on climate change. She said in a press conference, she said, quote, this is the first time in the history of mankind that we're setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution, close quote. Now, how's that? You can't get any more blunt. This is what they're doing. This is what they have a timeline. They have an outline of how they're going to do it. They're doing it intentionally. It's not an accident. And they're almost to the point of shutting the gate.
They are, and I love the analogy of how you catch a wild pig. You know, you continue to feed him at this point in the woods, and then you put one fence up, and then you put the second side up, and then you put the third side up, and then you put the fourth side up with a gate in it. And pigs are so prone to do that and go eat where they're fed. They're just going to walk inside until the gate is slammed shut. This is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio on the American Christian Network with Pat Wood of Technocracy Rising, both author, and he has a great website on it where he updates technocracy in the news on a daily basis. And I love all your articles that you're putting out there. So the question comes at this point in the show, what do we do about this? I mean, what's the solution? How do we push back against, you know, I mean, these guys have unlimited resources. They have a plan. We're disorganized and fractured to a great extent. We don't have the same resources. How do we fight this?
Well, the first thing is there needs to be a rising awareness of who the enemy really is. It's not Donald Trump. It's not Ted Cruz. It's not Hillary Clinton either. It's not Bernie Sanders. Those are not the enemies. The enemies are technocrats who are buried in the bowels of governments around the world, including ours, who are issuing these incessant regulations that are choking us to death. These people trickle down to the local level. Now, you can't go to the EPA and demand that somebody be fired that he wrote regulation you don't like. But you can go down to your local city council. You can go to your school board meeting, go to your water board meeting. You can go to your county commissioner's meeting and your county zoning committee meetings. You can get involved on a local basis and throw this garbage out, because I guarantee you it's in your community too. And I know it's in Spokane because I follow the whole thing in Spokane. I lived in Coeur d'Alene, for a long time. And there was quite a bit of headway made in Spokane. I'm afraid people laid down their arms too quickly because it's still there. But Agenda 21 has made its way down to every stinking community in America. And what Americans need to do at this point is get into their community and root this garbage out. They need to root the ideology out. They need to demand a return to the constitutional republic and to the rule of law. and get these outside consultants out of their community, get the general plans and stuff struck down if they have brought Agenda 21 into your community, and you can make a difference in your local community. And I'll tell you what, it sends a message up the food chain. That's how you send a message to these people. If you want to get a message through to them, don't send them a text, don't send them a tweet, don't send them a Facebook. Send them a cleaned-up town or a cleaned-up county and tell them, this is what we want things to look for, and next we're coming for you.
And as always, make sure you're well-trained in the use of firearms as well. They don't like that either.
Well, they don't like that either, but that's a given. We assume that's going to be the case.
Indeed.
Listen, we need, you know, we can't just make excuses for our own laziness and say, well, when a push comes to shove, I'll whip out my AR and I'll fight to the death. That's a cop out. Americans at this point, by and large, are still sitting on the couch watching American Idol or whatever it is they watch, and are not paying attention to their local community. And if we could have a raise of hands right now in this audience, I know there's some good people listening too, but if we could have a raise of hands and say, how many of you have ever been to a city council meeting? I'll bet you not everybody's going to raise their hand.
A lot more in Spokane probably than a lot of other places, but I would bet you're right.
Probably so. But still, it's not going to be a majority of people. And most people around America are still they're not engaged anywhere with local politics. Now, they like to sit and yell at the TV during national news. They like to yell at either Trump or maybe at somebody, you know, somebody else, Rubio or somebody. They like to holler at somebody. And they say they're involved in politics. Well, they're not. They're involved in a delusion that has been set up for them to be entertaining and angering while all the real stuff's going on right under their nose in their own community. They don't know that. Well, they need to have an attitude adjustment. Quit watching the TV and go down and watch your local leaders. When you see a general plan come in, demand to see it, demand to see who wrote it. If it was written by an out-of-town consultant, demand to see the contract. Do investigation on who is behind that. And if it doesn't line up right, go after him, hook, line, and sinker, and stop it. Get it thrown out right then before it gets rooted. This is one of the unfortunate things that happened in Kootenai County. I hate to say, well, I'm not going to go into that, but it happened there because it wasn't rooted out. People didn't see it coming early enough, and it got established, and then it was like, you know, pulling teeth out of a wildcat to get any traction to get rid of it.
Yeah, how do you get it back out? Absolutely.
That's right.
Well, Pat, if you could tell listeners a little bit about how they can get a hold of you, where they can go to sign up for your newsletters, and also if you're doing any radio or anything like that around the country, where they can go to listen to you as well.
Well, certainly. I've rolled all of my web presence into one site, one single site called technocracy.news. This is so important that all my attention is focused on this now. And so if you want Pat Wood, technocracy.news is where you'll find me. I've also been working very closely since the first of the year with a new colleague. Her name is Debbie Bacigalupi. She's a pistol on talking about Agenda 21, things like that. And you'll find a link to order Technocracy Rising on this as well. It's $20 essentially, and you can buy it in volume for steep discounts. I think everybody in the city and the county ought to have a copy of this book, and citizens should say, sir, you need to read this, period, on the subject. Read it. But anyway, that's where you find it. You can contact us on the website and join the newsletter right there as well on the website. And I encourage people to read the stories. The reason I'm curating these stories from all over the world, Matt, is to tell a story. People have to see what these people are saying. They need to hear it from their own lips, like people like Christiana Figueres. If I just wrote about that and said, well, you know, Figueres said such and such, who's Pat Wood? Nah, forget me. Go look at her. Go see what she said. And I'll tell you what, I post three or four stories a day. I thought I was going to have trouble finding enough stories to fill this thing up. Forget that. Even if I start out the morning dry, by the end of the day, I'm flooded with stuff I could put up on a website. I just don't put it all up. But I'm trying to tell a story for people to see in practical terms what's going on. So some of the headlines you see, like the World Bank seeks water, global water dominance by privatization of municipal systems. Not my article. Somebody else wrote it. Can solar energy run the world by making up the energy deficit? Here's another a good one. Thanks to Obama, America's biggest source of power is dying. That's all about coal, of course. It just goes on. Did you know that Australia went to the United Nations and made a demand of the United Nations to stop killer robot, the arms race, before it's too late? They did. They said, we need to ban this, folks. You didn't hear that in the local papers, I'll tell you. The stuff just goes on and on. So I put these stories up for people to get involved and start learning and seeing the seriousness of this. And the time is short. We don't have a lot of time to fiddle.
Well, in the last few minutes that we have, one of the stories that really stood out to me that has a great impact on us in the West of the United States is this idea that the World Bank wants to seek global water dominance by privatizing municipal systems. Now, my guest on Tuesday, Elaine Wellman, talked about how the government is using tribes to also achieve this same thing. If you could just give a few tidbits to the listeners about what that is even about controlling the water and how that is part of technocracy.
There are many different pincers that are going after water today, but it always is going in one direction. It's take it away from you and put it into the hands of the global elite. And this is not just water. This is resources of all kinds. This is what the BLM has done when they've gobbled up, you know, just tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of square miles of property in the West. Where does this property go? The roads get locked off, gates go up, padlocks go up. You can't get in it. You don't know what's going on. They put wolves, they put bears in there. You don't want to go in, even if you have a .44 Magnum. You know, you can't cover both sides at the same time. And land is being gobbled up in our country and around the world. Not just us; it's all over the world. The resources of the world are being stolen, Matt. The resources of the world are being stolen and aggregated into the hands of people who say they're going to put those resources into a global trust for the global commons. And, of course, the implication is there will be global trustees. Well, you're not going to be invited to be a trustee. Trust me on that. But, you know, ostensibly, they would be the trustees of this global trust where all these resources are being put in. And every time something is taken out of the hands of the people, the wealth-producing capability of that land is gone. The people no longer have it, you see.
Well, and I think that, I think that that's the key part of it. You know, when all of that's gone, there cannot be any more freedom. And that's what's so insidious about it, is if they deprive us of the resources and ability to fight them, eventually there's a tipping point where we can no longer fight. Well,
you're right.
And it's a losing battle. It is insidious.
Yes, the time to fight is now while we still can. There will be a time when we no longer have the strength, the power, nor the will, or the ability to fight it. But we still have an ability today. I don't know how long that window is going to be open. I think it's very close to being shut. But until it is, until, you know, we're just absolutely closed out, we can't just sit back and say, oh, well, you know, there goes the world. This is the greatest heist that's ever happened in the history of the world, Matt. The whole world is being stolen by these people. They're stealing it. And who do you call to arrest somebody that steals the whole world? Hey, if they're just stealing from the 7-Eleven down the street, you call a cop or somebody, you know, sheriff. But who do you call to arrest somebody that's in process of stealing the whole planet?
Well, Pat Wood. Nobody. You call Pat Wood.
You call Pat Wood, right? Well, you know, there is a legal problem here, but listen, folks, this is truly what's going on with the United Nations, and you can see it in a microcosm here in the West with what the BLM, what Fish and Game, the National Park Service are doing to Western landowners. You can see it. It's just as clear can be. They want the land. They're going to take the land, and you ain't going to see it again. Basically, that's it.
Well, Pat, we got to wrap the show up. If you can, plug your website one more time.
Well, you betcha. Technocracy.news. And that's all I got to say about it. By the way, I'm thrilled about the progress that you have made up there in Washington State. I follow almost everything you do. You've done a great job, and I know you're not done. And people, make sure that Matt Shea gets reelected. I don't care what you have to do. Put the money on the table. Put the shoe leather out there on the street. Whatever it takes, make sure he gets back into office again. As long as you're willing to go there, Matt.
Well, that's the question my wife and I ask every year, actually.
I don't blame you. And nobody would blame you if you said, I've had enough of this.
But, well, you know, just like you, you know, somebody's got to stand up and do this. So thank you very much, Pat, for joining me on Patriot Radio once again. We'll have you back on here in the near future and just appreciate all the work you're doing as well. God bless you.
Thanks, Matt. Bye.
Pat Wood, Technocracy Rising. If you haven't subscribed to the newsletter, please do. Fascinating articles. I look at it every day. Fascinating articles. And he sends it straight to you so you can read headlines if you don't have enough time. Sometimes that's how it is for me during the day. Doing a great job. And, you know, all the success that we're having here in Washington State, expanding freedom, is due in large part to all of you and also to the American Christian Network to get the message and the word out about what to do and how to restore a God-honoring constitutional republic, which we all believe in. Well, thank you to everybody for joining me today on Patriot Radio. Remember, we still live in the greatest country in the world, despite the internal evil we're facing. It's just going to take all of us, united, to make freedom a reality again. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.